The DOT's tarmac stranding rule takes effect today. Southwest and Chautauqua Airlines face civil fines. And the flight attendants of Northwest 253 are honored for bravery. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, April 29th, 2010. Effective today, the DOT's new tarmac stranding rule goes into effect. Watch for excitement at an airport near you. Airlines are going to be required to provide things like potable water and working toilets after 2 hours on the tarmac, and they'll have to give you the choice to return to the terminal after being stranded 3 hours. Some analysts think lots of flights will be canceled. Some even say it will be done tactically by the airlines to punish passengers and pressure the DOT to cave. We'll be watching. The U.S. Department of Transportation has assessed a civil penalty against Southwest Airlines for violating federal rules regarding bumping on oversold flights. Southwest was ordered to cease and desist from further violations and assessed a civil penalty of $200,000. Up to $20,000 of that may be used by the carrier to develop methods beyond what the DOT requires to provide prominent notice to passengers of the carrier's oversales policies and the rights of bumped passengers. When a flight is oversold, the DOT requires airlines to seek volunteers willing to give up their seats for compensation. If not enough volunteers come forward, the carrier has to give passengers who are bumped involuntarily a written statement describing their rights and explaining how it decides who will be bumped from an oversold flight. In most cases, passengers are also entitled to cash compensation up to $800 if that happens. The DOT Aviation Enforcement Office's investigation included a review of consumer complaints sent to the carrier and a site inspection at the airline's headquarters last year. DOT says there were numerous instances in which Southwest denied boarding to passengers but did not comply with provisions of the rule. The FAA has proposed a $348,000 civil penalty against Chautauqua Airlines for allegedly operating some of its regional jets without performing inspections required by five different FAA airworthiness directives. FAA investigators blame problems with Chautauqua's management of its maintenance program and its system for tracking the status of airworthiness directives. One of the issues involved mandated repetitive inspections for possible cracks in the lower wing planks of Canadair regional jets after every 5,000 flights. The FAA alleges that eight different Chautauqua CRJs conducted more than 9,900 flights between October 2007 and December 2008 before the required lower wing inspections were done. FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt notes, quote, "Problems with the AD system are inconsistent with an airline's continued safe operation," unquote. Chautauqua has 30 days to respond. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, honored the eight Detroit-based flight attendants who successfully thwarted a terrorist attack on Northwest Flight 253 Christmas Day. They received the union's C.B. Lansing Award for Heroism at the annual Board of Directors meeting on Monday. Union President Patricia Friend commented, quote, "Their quick responses were nothing short of heroic as they identified and mobilized the necessary resources on board and saved the lives of 290 passengers and crew. They exemplify what it means to be a flight attendant in 2010, a frontline safety and security professional," unquote. The C.B. Lansing Memorial Award was established following the tragic and heroic events aboard Aloha Airlines Flight 243 on April 28th of 1988, when flight attendants faced a sudden and serious aircraft incident. C.B. Lansing did not survive the incident. However, her fellow flight attendants persevered, rendering life-saving first aid in flight as they planned for an emergency landing. The award is not an annual presentation. It's given out to a crew or crew member who displays heroism beyond the call of duty whenever that happens. There have been seven prior recipients. Up next on ANN, NTSB opens the files on a midair over the Hudson. ATK is counting on the F-35 for its future. And GE and Rolls make the Pentagon a better offer. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 29th. I'm Paul Plack. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board yesterday opened a public docket on a mid-air collision last summer between a tour helicopter and a private airplane over the Hudson River. On August 8th, a Eurocopter AS-350 operated by Liberty Helicopters and a Piper PA-32 operated by a private pilot collided over the river near Hoboken, New Jersey. There were no survivors among the 9 occupants of the 2 aircraft. The docket includes investigative group factual reports, interview summaries, crew statements, air traffic control transcripts, controller statements, the meteorology report, and other documents. The information being released is factual in nature and does not provide any analysis. That will come later, along with a determination of probable cause. The decision by the Obama administration to cancel NASA's Constellation program came as a major blow to Alliant Tech Systems, but the company is landing other work. ATK now calls the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter the cornerstone of its growth strategy, and announced this week that it's received a contract worth $240 million from Lockheed Martin to produce additional composite components for low-rate initial production lots of the plane. ATK also reports landing a separate $10 million contract from Northrop Grumman to serve as Northrop's backup source for F-35 composite inlet ducts on early lots. Run-on extensions covering additional production could generate an additional $40 million. The Pentagon, White House, and Congress have all turned their backs on the idea of funding 2 competing engine designs for the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, but GE and Rolls-Royce are not giving up. The team is offering its F-136 engine on a fixed-price contract as a way to mitigate the risk of cost overruns to the federal government. The companies say that with more than 70% of its development complete, the F-36 is poised to enter flight testing next year. Chances of getting the engine reconsidered probably are not hurt by the fact that the Pratt & Whitney F-135, the engine which was chosen, is now expected by the Government Accountability Office to suffer development cost overruns of 50%. Still ahead, Alaska's big aviation trade show opens Saturday. AEA's new chairman and vice chairman are announced. And here are some things Northrop may not have considered. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wasp GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wasp GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, April 29th. I'm Paul Plack. Aircraft from all over Alaska, and even a few from the lower 48, are headed to the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport for the 2010 Alaska Airmen's Association Trade Show and Convention. Opening day is this Saturday. Executive Director Dee Hansen explains, quote, "We have 4 different Cessna aircraft coming up from the lower 48 to participate, and some new aircraft like the carbon fiber Guiduc and a new ultralight helicopter, as well as different types of Super Cubs and Husky aircraft," unquote. Static displays of military aircraft will also be featured, and 250 vendors are committed. This will be the show's 13th consecutive year. Among the highlights is a completely rebuilt Piper PA-18 Super Cub offered as a fundraiser for the Alaska Airmen's Association. It includes parts from more than 60 vendors and comes set up well for Alaska with Tundra tires, Landis Airglass skis, and AeroSet floats. The winner will be announced on Sunday night at the close of the show. The Aircraft Electronics Association has announced the results of elections held earlier this month at its annual convention in Orlando. Three incumbents seeking re-election and one new board member were elected to represent the United States on the AEA board. And for the first time under new bylaws, three board members were also elected to represent the association's three international regions, Canada, Europe, and the South Pacific. All members of the AEA board are limited to three-year terms. The new AEA chairman of the board is Greg Vail, longtime member and former vice chairman, and the general manager of Bloomington Avionics in Bloomington, Illinois. He has more than 29 years' experience in the aviation business and is a licensed single-engine pilot with instrument endorsement. Gary Harpster of Duncan Aviation in Lincoln, Nebraska, was elected as the new AEA vice chairman of the board. Harpster was first elected to the AEA Board of Directors in 2005. For a list of the others elected, see the text version of this story, dated April 28th, at aero-news.net. And finally today, Northrop Grumman is moving its corporate headquarters from Los Angeles to the Falls Church Arlington area of Virginia, just about a coast-to-coast move. For the past couple months, there's been a note on the company's website, noting the decision to move was made on January 4th. The goal is to open the new office by the summer of 2011. In explaining why Virginia won out over other offers from Washington, D.C. and Maryland, CEO Wes Bush explained, quote, "Our final decision was driven largely by facility considerations, proximity to our customers, and overall economics," unquote. The biggest customer, of course, is Uncle Sam, just up the road. Among the economic considerations, Virginia reportedly spent $14 to $16 million on incentives. Negotiations with several building owners are underway, with a specific site for the new office expected to be announced soon. About 300 jobs will be moving there. Having made a few moves myself during my radio career, I feel compelled to offer some advice to Wes and the gang. There are some changes coming you might not have considered. First of all, you can start sleeping in a little more. No more getting up at 5 a.m. to get a phone call through to your favorite senator before a committee session. People on the West Coast are expected to get up early to do business with people on the East Coast. Nobody on the East Coast stays in the office till 8:30 p.m. to catch the end of the business day on the West Coast. Second, be aware that you're likely to bump into your ex on the street a lot more often. No, actually, I'm talking about Eads. It looks like they're going ahead with KCX without you, so they'll be in town a lot. And finally, you may see Nancy Pelosi less often. She's probably not real happy with you for leaving her state, just as taxes there are about to get really exciting. And besides, ever since she got her own airline, she doesn't hang out in the D.C. area much after hours anymore. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, part two of Jim Campbell's conversation with a former FAA inspector, Ed Jeska, who's fighting what he believes is retribution from the Birmingham FISDO over a political embarrassment. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.